Good morning. I have nothing to disclose. So today I have the pleasure of presenting findings from my dissertation, and this is, excuse me. The purpose of the study was to understand women living with HIV and AIDS perceptions of male partner support after they disclosed their status, and also during pregnancy and immediately following the birth of their child. So what we really wanted to know was whether male partners were supportive and the extent of that support, how that support was displayed. This is just some background information about HIV and AIDS in globally and also in Nigeria. There are about 34 million people infected worldwide, out of which 23.5 reside in sub-Saharan Africa. 13.4 million out of that 22.5 are women. In Nigeria, where the study was conducted, there are 3 million people living with HIV and AIDS. Nigeria happens to be the second country in the world, right after South Africa, with the highest number of people living with HIV and AIDS. The prevalence rate in Nigeria is 3.6%, and in Lagos, the state where the study was conducted, the prevalence rate of HIV and AIDS is 5.1%. So I'm just going to give you a run-through about some of the guidelines when a woman is living with HIV, some of the guidelines she needs to follow in order to get pregnant. So what the healthcare workers usually tell the women is to first inform them about their childbearing intentions. So don't just come to the clinic and not say anything if you want to have children. Let us know whether you want to have children and how soon you want to have children. And the second thing they advise, and the reason they advise for this is because there are some antiretroviral drugs that are prescribed to women living with HIV that are not compatible with pregnancy. The second thing the healthcare workers advise the women is that they need to get their CD4 count to a high enough level. So at least the CD4 count should be greater than or equal to 350 cells per cubic millimeter. And also they tell them to time their conception, so they should only have unprotected sex during that small window when they're ovulating to reduce the chances that their partner will get infected. And they also tell them to plan their delivery, so they should decide on whether they want to have a cesarean section or whether they want to have a vaginal delivery. And the reason for this is so that the exposed infants are given the necessary antiretroviral drugs following the birth of the child. And that way it decreases the chance that the child would get HIV. So a brief run through the literature. One thing I found out when I was doing the literature review was that in many of the conversation on PMT, prevention of mother-to-child transmission, and childbearing decision-making, men are largely excluded from these discussions. And of course, the role and support of male partners is critical, because what some of the studies have found out is that the overall health and the well-being of women and children improves when the male partners are involved. So if they're involved in voluntary counseling and testing services, if they're involved in PMTCT services, it also improves the health and well-being of the women and children. And that's a key factor in the childbearing decision-making of women. So Lagos State is the commercial capital of Nigeria. Lagos is the one in red, circled in red. It's the smallest state geographically, but it has about 17 million people. It's the second most populous state in Nigeria. The study site was in the Lagos State University Teaching Hospital, which is one of two teaching hospitals in Lagos. HIV care is highly subsidized, and it's funded by the U.S. government. It's one of the PEPFAR sites in Nigeria. This is a picture of the hospital. And this is just a picture of the front of the hospital where the patients wait before they are called into the main waiting area. The research question we had was, how are the childbearing decisions of women living with HIV influenced by their partner's desires for children? The recruitment was through purposive sampling. We had a total sample size of 15, and it was broken down into 6 and 9, because 6 of the women were interviewed the previous year when they were pregnant, and I followed up with them after they had the baby the following year. And the 9 new participants that I got were 9 newly recruited participants who just had children under age 1. Some of the eligibility criteria included being diagnosed, clinically diagnosed with HIV, being between the age of 18 to 43, and of course having a child less than 1 year old. The study was conducted in Pidgin English and English. It was in-depth interviews that lasted 40 to 45 minutes. I paid them about $7, and it was all audio taped. I received IRB approval from Penn State and the Lagos University Teaching Hospital. And the interview guide I used was adapted from Cooper and colleagues in South Africa, because they've done a lot of work in this area. And also it was informed by the literature review. Some of the questions I explored included their childbearing experiences, the previous childbearing experiences of these women, future childbearing, their partner's feelings about pregnancy, and also the role of their partners after they disclose their status, and also pre- and postpartum. The two theoretical frameworks that guided the study was the PEN3 cultural model, and PEN3 is used to examine the role culture plays in the health beliefs and decisions of people. It was developed by Erin Boer, and it includes three domains, and within the three domains there are three dimensions. So there's cultural empowerment, relationships and expectations, and cultural identity, and I focused for the study on relationships and expectations domain, because that was the one closely suited to the study. And also I used the Ottawa Decision Support Framework, and the premise of that is that decision making is influenced by perceptions about the decisions, perceptions of significant others, and the resources they need to make their decisions. The data analysis was conducted using in vivo. I coded the data, and the second author also reviewed the codes to ensure intercoder reliability. And also, the analysis was done using content analysis. Some of the results we found, the mean age was about 32 years. Most of the participants had at least a secondary education or higher. About nine of them were not employed. Most of them were of the Igbo ethnic group in Nigeria. About 14 of them were married, and most of them were Christians, or all of them were Christians. Most of them had partners whose HIV status was negative. All of them had HIV 11 of them had HIV negative children. Most of them had their children vaginally, and also only 5 of the women breastfed their children. The main themes we identified was emotional support and reassurance, partnership and faith, and tangible support, and I'll talk about what each one means. For the first one, this refers to the emotional support that the male partners provided to the women living with HIV by relating to them in a non-stigmatizing manner. And this is one of the quotes from the women to illustrate this. So this is a 33-year-old woman who said, "He has been very supportive in all aspects. It's as if I don't even have it." And then she talked about how, if not for her husband and the doctor friend that she had, she would have been dead by now. And then she goes on to talk about, even with our HIV positive status, he doesn't love me less. He loves me more. And that was where the title of this came from. Partnership and faith refers to the spiritual support male partners provided for women living with HIV when they shared similar faith values. And this is a quote from a 28-year-old woman to illustrate this. "With prayer and Christianity, it helped me a lot. My pregnancy went normal. It was by God's grace I did everything. And so that was why I gave my baby the name Amarachukwu, which means the miracle of God, the grace of God. My husband joined me in prayers. I had to have faith. My life is in God's hand." So we found out that many of the partners, and even the women, their faith was reflected in the names, the kind of names they gave their children. And the last theme on tangible support just refers to the physical support provided by male partners. This 29-year-old participant said, "Somebody doing 5% more, 5% before, now he does 10% more for me not to think." So she's talking about how her husband helps out more in the house and even with different chores, you know. And the other participant, the 34-year-old woman, talked about how her husband gave her some of the payment for the cesarean section she was going to have. And he was even the one that was cleaning and dressing up her stitches for her after the cesarean section. So from this study, all the male partners were supportive except for one unmarried mother who was a participant in the study. And this is contrary to what's in most of the literature, because most of the literature talk about, when they talk about male partners, they talk about how male partner violence and how some male partners are not supportive. But we found this contrary to what's in the literature, because most of our male partners in this study were supportive. And also, the level of support remained consistent. So whether it was after disclosure or after the birth, or before the birth of their child or after the birth of their child, the level of male partner support remained consistent over that continuum. And also, the male partner support influenced the relationship with their in-laws to create a conducive environment for PMTCT program. So when the male partner was supportive, that encouraged women living with HIV to breastfeed, for example, or to access prevention of mother-to-child transmission services, or to even access voluntary counseling and testing services. So the male partner support was critical to ensuring the well-being of the women and children. So UNAIDS has a vision which is to eliminate new pediatric HIV infection by the year 2015. And in order to achieve this UNAIDS vision, we argue here that men must be included in HIV programs such as PMTCT. So not targeting PMTCT programs and VCT programs to just the women, but also to include the men. And also preconception counseling for women living with HIV and their partners, like the previous speaker talked about before, you know, because some of these women will not attend antenatal care services at the hospital. They may decide to give birth to their children somewhere else. So counseling these women even before they get pregnant, and also their partners. And also, decision making is a process that changes over time. So it's not that you just make a decision once and leave it at that. It can change over the years due to so many other factors. And also due to prior childbearing experiences. Some of the strengths of the study is the theoretical frameworks that were used, PEN3 and ODSF, because PEN3 is targeted towards people of African descent. And ODSF is also targeted towards the healthcare workers. Lasuth, which was where the hospital where the study was conducted, is one of the best sites in Nigeria because it's highly funded by PEPFAR and other grants. And also it was a longitudinal study, so I followed them up. I interviewed them when they were pregnant, followed them up after they had children. And this also helped to build trust, because I noticed that when I went back the second time, the women opened up to me more, and it also made the conversation very enriching. Some of the limitations, of course, you can't expand, it's limited, the findings are limited to just the women and that hospital. You can't extend it all over Nigeria. And spouses were not included. So if I were to do this again, I would want to include the spouses. And also social desirability bias, you know, some of the women would tell me things, you never know, maybe they're trying to paint their partners in a good light. Lastly, some of the things I would like to do in the future, of course, is to include the spouses in conversations, and also to further explore the complex way spirituality is expressed prepartum when the unknown is there, and also postpartum after they've had their children, just to explore some of the things that may vary. I would like to acknowledge the staff of the hospital where I conducted the study, and also my dissertation committee members, and also my advisor who's here in the audience. All right, thank you. Excellent.